We welcome to the Gospel Spotlight Dr. Roderick Claybrooks. Doctor, how are you today?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
I'm doing great as well. I see not only are you a doctor, you are interested in healing the body, but also you're interested in healing the mind and financial woes as well. You wrote the book.
That's correct.
The book is simply entitled The Black Student's Guide. That Black Student Guide to Success has a workbook with it. What made you interested in doing something like this? Because you are a successful doctor working on the spine, and you could have just been that successful doctor and left everything alone. But what made you want to help students and their finances?
Well, it started because when I see people in the emergency rooms or I see them in my office, you know, quite often you meet a patient, and of course the initial interaction is because of a medical condition. But as you get to know people, they share a lot of aspects of their lives with you. And one of the patterns that I saw was, you know, people just not really achieving their dreams, not reaching their goals. And a lot of it sometimes had to do with education. So I try to talk to them about that. But then it's quite often a common thread or a common theme in people who are struggling. They have lack of financial literacy and lack of financial understanding. And so I wanted to kind of tap into that aspect of what makes some people in our community struggle as well.
The Black Student's Guide to Success. Is there a chapter in there on the NBA?
Absolutely. And one of the statistics that I point out is that every year there's approximately 400 players on NBA rosters, but there's approximately 1 million physicians in the United States of America. So as crazy as it may sound, the facts bear out that you have a better chance of becoming a brain surgeon than you do of making the MBA. And I know it sounds crazy, but the numbers don't lie. But a child, if you tell him that, he really actually believes he's going to make it to the NBA. You know, if he's a good high school player, he believes he can make it to the NBA, but he doesn't believe he can be a brain surgeon, which is actually just not true. He'll have a better chance of being a brain surgeon than playing in the NBA at any time.
Would you say it's cultural conditioning that a young child, especially a young black child, would feel like I can pick up a basketball, I can play football, or I can be an entertainer and I can make it, when you and I know that the majority of people who are in that field are not successful? What makes a young child think they can be successful like that?
Well, I do think it's a bit of cultural conditioning, and I also think that it's environment as well. So let's start with the cultural conditioning. You know, the images that are celebrated in general, and this is a generalization, but in general, the images that are celebrated of African Americans, they usually are entertainers. So we know that they have, you know, video games with these African American athletes on it. They do commercials. They do endorsements. You know, they're celebrated people. It really doesn't matter what their backgrounds are. If they're very good athletes, they're celebrated not only just in our country, but they're celebrated all over the world. So I think that when a child sees that on television, they see someone that looks like them. In many cases, if you trace back their history, they come from a similar background as them, whether it may be a bad neighborhood or a single-parent household. So they can relate to these people that are being celebrated. And I think that that is one aspect that makes a child believe that they can do it. But I also think it's related to environment. You know, if you're growing up in a neighborhood, you know, I talk about in the book, I'm from the west side of Detroit. And even though I actually was blessed to have both of my parents, two working parents, it wasn't the kind of neighborhood where you felt you would grow up and become anything successful in a professional realm, because there was no professionals in our neighborhood. There were, you know, parks and places to play sports, but there were no professionals in our neighborhood. And I think in order for you to believe you can achieve something, you have to be exposed to it. So kids are exposed to athletics all the time. They're encouraged in athletics. They see athletics on television. In my opinion, not enough African-American youth are exposed to academic success. And so that was another reason that I wrote the book. I wanted people to see that someone was from a neighborhood just like themselves, who can't play basketball, can't play football, can't run very fast, still has an opportunity to build a decent lifestyle without going into entertainment.
Dr. Claybrooks, what is wealth?
You know, I think that that definition is fluid. I think it's specific for each individual. But one way to look at wealth, in my opinion, is to have enough resources so that you can retire. You know, we are seeing more and more people who have to work well into their 70s, not because that's how they envisioned it, but they literally cannot afford to stop working. They cannot have enough money to retire. They don't have any insurance after they stop working. They have no assets to pass on to the next generation. In my opinion, a person who has wealth will have assets to pass on to the next generation. In general, African Americans leave little or nothing behind to the next generation. In general, African Americans trail significantly behind Caucasian race as it relates to income, education, net worth, savings, and inheritance. So in my opinion, wealth is having enough finances so that you can retire when you are ready to retire or be healthy enough to retire and have enough finances to pass on to the next generation.
If I'm interested in being able to conjugate a verb, interested in having a intelligent conversation, why is it that my peers would say to me, you're acting white?
Once again, it goes back to cultural conditioning. We have this I don't even know what the right term to give it, but we have this wrong way of thinking in our community that if you want to be successful, then you're acting white. If you try to speak standard American English, you're talking white. If you want to get straight A's on your test, you're just trying to suck up to white people. If you're trying to do well on your job and actually get a promotion and move up the ladder, you know, you're just trying to follow behind those white people. I don't know where it came from. I think it's a poisonous mentality. I think it's a shameful mentality because I think we all should strive to be the best that we can be. And unfortunately, I think that people who say that don't understand how, you know, I often tell people you have to understand the rules of the game if you're going to win at the game. And I tell the young men that I talk to, whether it's in our churches and things of that nature, you know, if you look at the guys who get endorsements, if you say you like sports, watch the guys who get endorsements and watch the guys who don't get endorsements. The guys who don't speak well, the guys who are beating their wives, getting arrested, those guys don't get McDonald's commercials. Look at the guys who do get the endorsements because corporate America is not going to put your face on something that they can't sell. So if you can't present yourself in a professional, respectable manner, that doesn't work for you in this country. So you have to really decide what you want out of life. You can stay where you are, you know, speak broken English, walk around with your pants hanging down, don't comb your hair, and you'll be here 20, 30, 40, 50 years from now if you haven't succumbed to the violence in your neighborhood. Or you can figure out what the rules of the game are to be successful in America, and you can build a legacy for your family. Now, those two choices to me are quite simple, but for some of us, it seems like a difficult choice to make.
When, as an African American, we are successful financially, what is our obligation to the community?
You know, I tell everybody, I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for the people who came before me. And you know, many people who came before me did not have the opportunity to go to school like I did. You know, when I look at those grainy black and white videos of those people marching with dogs being attacked on them and sicked on them, the police or officers and firefighters putting hoses on those people weren't marching so they could go to school. They were marching so I could go to school. So I think that we have an obligation to pay back, you know, to pay back what was done for us, the sacrifices that were made, to just put the next generation in a better position. So that's one of the reasons that I write and I go speak to kids and do things like that, because I feel indebted to who came before me, all the sacrifices that were made, so I would have the opportunities that I have had. And I try to pass that along and give something back to my community through speaking and teaching and writing and things of that nature, just to try to encourage the next generation. So that I think that anyone who doesn't feel an obligation to give back to their community is being quite selfish.
There's a cliche that I really don't like. And the cliche is, if you want to hide something from a black person, put it in a book. My question to you, what would make African-American or a black youth pick up the Black Student Guide to Success and the Black Student's Guide to Success workbook?
Well, I think it's going to take encouragement from adults. You know, it's quite interesting. You know, Dr. Ben Carson ran for president this year. My dad gave me his book. So I read Dr. Carson's book not because as an eighth grader, I was just so studious and so motivated that I just wanted to go to the library and buy his book. My dad read his book, and in his Tennessee Southern drawl, he said, boy, you need to read this book about this colored doctor. And I read the book, and I was very inspired by the book. And it just goes to show you that when adults are invested in the process and they are engaged with the youth that are around them, I think that's how young people would buy my book. You know, when I have my books being sold, it's usually a parent buying the book for their child. Young people don't just come up and say, "Hey, I want your book." It's always a mother dragging their son mm-hmm. and say, "Here, sign my son's book." And I chuckle on the inside because that's what it's really going to take. And I tell everyone, the reason that I read Dr. Carson's book, the two or three times I did read it, is because my father introduced that book to me. And my father had an eighth grade education. But he knew it was something special about seeing a black surgeon on the cover of a book that his son needed to read about. And at that time, I had no aspirations to become a physician whatsoever. But I remember in eighth grade distinctively, my father coming up to me and said, "Boy, you need to read about this colored surgeon."
Our guest, Dr. Roderick Clay Brooks. You mentioned Dr. Ben Carson, who yes. is from Detroit.
Yes.
You are from Detroit. And yes. when one think of Detroit, the first thing they think of is Motown. They think of the music. They think of the car industry. But one seldom thinks of a black physician. Why is that?
Well, I just don't think our story is being told. And it's very interesting that you say that. The medical school that I went to was Wayne State University, which is in downtown Detroit. And outside of the HBCU medical schools like Howard and Morehouse, Wayne State University puts out more African-American physicians than any medical school in the country. But no one tells that story. You know, Detroit has a very large African-American population, but nobody tells that story. Detroit has one of the largest populations of African-American physicians in the country, but nobody tells that story. So it's one of those situations where, you know, if the word isn't getting out, you know, people do continue to associate Detroit with Motown, which, you know, I'm very proud of that aspect of our city. But, you know, let's be frank, that was 40 years ago. You know, Detroit has a different face now, and it's going in a different direction now. It's not really the capital of pop music currently. A lot of good gospel music comes out of Detroit, but Detroit is not really the capital of pop music right now.
Dr. Clay Brooks.
Or R&B music.
Yes, let's get your book in the hands of folks. How can they purchase your book? How can they find out more about you?
They can go to our website. It's www.blackstudentsguide.com. That's all one word, blackstudentsguide.com. And they can purchase the Black Student's Guide to Success. They can purchase the Black Student's Guide to Success workbook. They can purchase the Black Student's Guide to Financial Success, and they can also purchase the Black Parent's Guide to Financial Success.
Dr. Clay Brooks, it has been an honor, and thanks for sharing with us. And we are hoping that a lot of folks will be blessed to pick up your book and to get the knowledge that's in your book. And we want to thank you for sharing that book with the world. Thank you, Dr. Clay Brooks.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. It's our guest inside of the Gospel Spotlight, Dr. Roderick Clay Brooks, the book, The Black Student's Guide to Success, and also there's a workbook with it. Pick it up.